Dubai Eye
103.8. On a Thursday, we turn our attention to inspiring individuals for making tracks. And today, we're broadcasting live from Ras Al Khaimah. We take this opportunity to speak to somebody we've been meaning to catch up with for quite some time. Given we're in the Emirate, it's wonderful to be able to speak to the founding executive director of the Sheikh Saud bin Zakar Al Qassimi Foundation for Policy Research right here in Ras Al Khaimah. Prior to that appointment, she was the acting director of research at the Dubai School of Government, has over 20 years of experience working in the international education sector, including Singapore and Australia. More than 50 publications, including a book entitled Education and the Reverse Gender Divide in the Gulf States, Embracing the Global, Ignoring the Local, published by Teachers College Press. Her latest research focuses on philanthropy and education in the MENA region, as well as the nature and impact of father involvement within the Arab world. Passionate about all things related to education, and hopes that the work that the foundation that she is now the executive director of will continue to make a positive impact on the lives and education of those here in the region and further afield. An absolute pleasure to welcome to Making Tracks, Natasha Ridge. Dr. Natasha Ridge, thanks for being with us.
It's a great pleasure, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for hosting us in your Emirate as well.
We always like to bring people to Ras Al Khaimah. We love it so much.
We've really enjoyed it down here this morning and throughout the course of the last evening as well. It's been great. You've called Ras Al Khaimah home for how long now?
Since 2001, actually. Okay. I first moved here, yeah.
So it is a home from home in more ways than one. We're going to get back to your roots in just a few moments. But before all that, let's talk education, if we can. And you've worked tirelessly here and other parts of the world to forward and impact the lives of individuals through education, through the work you're doing here in Ras Al Khaimah. Is that focus on improving education just here in Ras Al Khaimah, or is it a lot wider scope in terms of the UAE and further afield?
No, it's certainly much further a scope. So we're trying to improve the quality of education here in Ras Al Khaimah first and foremost. Yeah. But overall, really, we're looking to improve the quality of education in the region and also to contribute to common global issues such as boys' underachievement, which is no longer an issue just for the UAE or just for the Gulf or even just for the Caribbean and others, but now is something that's happening in the UK, the USA, Australia. So we're really keen in also influencing global issues as well.
Are you seeing results?
Well, we've seen the first formation of a working group on boys' disadvantage created by UNESCO. So that's really a massive achievement to take something that was not on the global agenda at all 10 years ago and that this year has suddenly become a feature of both the World Bank, UNESCO, and also other work on boys' disadvantage globally. So, yeah.
How do you sort of quantify results? What I mean by that is that in a number of other fields, you can see results fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. When it comes to education, I'm assuming that it's a bit more of a slow burner to see results. What sort of time frame do you give yourself to quantify results?
Oh, I think, yeah, with education, it's usually a life cycle, isn't it? So it could be 10 years, 12 years, 20 years. I think the magic number is 10, actually, for many things. We talk about 10,000 hours of practice. We talk about 10. Yeah. So I would say, really, I think if something's going to get traction, it takes probably about 10 years or so.
Let's talk more about you, if we can, because those listening intently to this interview and interviews we've done in the past will know that isn't an indigenous Emirati accent that you have at the moment, although you've called this home since the early 2000s. From whence do you come, Natasha?
From whence do I come? Good question. I grew up in Orange, New South Wales, which is a small country town about 4 hours west of Sydney. Born in Sydney, but then went to 5 different primary schools all over before we actually finally settled back in Orange, which is my mother's hometown.
And is Australia still home for you? Is that where your heart is?
Actually, I'd say my heart is pretty much in the UAE. I call Ras Al Khaimah home. Students that I actually taught when I first came here are now working for me. So I'm actually seeing generational involvement with families here. So, yeah, I really call Ras Al Khaimah home these days.
Talk to us about your childhood. Was it a sort of typical Australian childhood, lots of outdoor activity?
Yes, I don't think you can avoid being outdoors in Australia. lots of, yes, encounters with snakes, spiders and all manner of nasty, bitey things. But I think also a lot of overseas travel, I think, which is very common for Australians. We lived in the UK for a year and we went to Indonesia back before there were hordes of Australians going there. So, yeah. But in addition to that, living in the country, I think that was a very quintessential Australian experience growing up with orcharding and my grandparents had a cherry orchard. So I think that was very typical of rural Australia.
And education, did that play a large part in your early life? Was that something that was encouraged from grandparents, parents as well?
Yeah, I think, well, interestingly, none of my grandparents actually completed secondary school.
Okay.
So my father was the first one in both sides of the family to go on to university and to get his degree, and he's a doctor now. But he always, I realize now, but his expectation that you would go on to university was something very formative, and I think I took it for granted that everybody had that.
Yeah.
But now I realize actually, no, not everyone has that experience of, yeah, you will go on to university, it's not like an option.
And were you a very academic child?
Well, the absence of a television until I was 14 meant that I had to do it. Yes, exactly. Even if I wasn't. So, I did a lot of reading. And yeah, so yes, definitely I love to read and I love to write. So in that sense, an academic child, yes.
And was it sort of imparted on you the importance of education from a young age?
Yes, I think my father being a doctor, my mum's a nurse. I think both of them very passionate about all things to do with education. But I wouldn't say that it was... or the be-all and end-all as well. I think there was also this strong emphasis on just being out and about in the community and connecting with people and, yeah, those kind of things as well.
Obviously very social as well during your... and something of an organiser, I understand. Is that right?
Yes, yes. My mother does remind me of my many organising attempts as a young child. Australia Day celebrations apparently featured heavily. But, yes, I did love to organise people and things. Some of my colleagues will attest to that continuing till today.
And cooking was a passion of yours from a young age? Does that remain to... Is that still the case these days?
Yes, when I get time, I do love to cook and eat healthily and eat tasty food. And the UAE, I think, has now become... When I first moved here, it was pretty hard to get some of the ingredients we can get today. But, yeah, today you can really pretty much get anything and everything. So it's wonderful these days.
Work experience. Is it true that you, Dr. Natasha Ridge, started your illustrious career in education in a McDonald's?
Yes.
And what did you learn from that?
Yes, I'm still very proud of my McDonald's experience. I think it was like a very shaping and wonderful thing to do. I learned a lot about accountability, about teamwork, about being on time. One of the famous slogans that I actually have still not forgotten was time to lean, time to clean. Something that I think many parents would like to impart to their children. But it was just a really great experience for a young person at 15 who had no experience of the world of work. And also that idea that you can succeed at things. You know, that idea of McDonald's gives you this really idea of quick wins, you know, that... And you're quickly given lots of incentives and badges and stars and free food. So it was wonderful.
and to that end, I mean, it's one thing that we've talked about quite a lot on the agenda in recent times, the sort of lack of opportunities for kids to get holiday jobs or part-time work here in the UAE, as you might do in other parts of the world, be it a paper round or whatever. Is that important? Is that important part of the education process?
Oh, definitely. I think that's something that... We've been in discussions here with, we do try to organise work experience for kids and try to actually get those opportunities for part-time jobs. I think that's what so many, both expatriates and Emirati children just miss out on. And we actually take Emirati boys to McDonald's for one day of work experience and they really love it. And actually we ask them at the end of the day, oh, would you actually consider a career in McDonald's now? And most of them will say, oh, yes, yes, we really enjoyed this. Yeah. And I just think, kids are missing out on that opportunity to do something else and to feel like these are kids that we take from the sort of lowest academic track. So they feel a sense of accomplishment. I think that's what a part-time job gives you, a sense of accomplishment in another area.
We are going to obviously make time for the music. We've charged you with choosing four Sonic Signposts, four tracks from your years, making tracks here live on Dubai i103.8. What's your first song and why?
Okay, yes, this is very hard. I was thinking, what am I going to give away in my choice of songs? But
We won't judge.
No, thanks.
Colleagues might, but we won't, all right?
Yeah, exactly. I think the first song I've chosen is Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson. Fond memories of dancing around to that with my best friend in school. So, yeah, just a great, great song, great era.
It is track number one for our special guest on Making Tracks. We are in conversation with Dr. Natasha Ridge.
For once in my life, it's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collarbone, my favorite winter coat, this wind is in my mind. I see the kids in the street, but not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them eat? A sonorous disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one-man soul.
Talking Making Tracks with the founding executive director of the Sheikh Zayed bin Zakaria Al-Qassimi Foundation for Policy Research right here in Ras Al Khaimah. Dr. Natasha Ridge is making tracks with us. And you mentioned a little bit earlier on today that it was a given during your formative years that you were going to go into further education, that that was the next move for you from those years of study over in Australia. Where did you go and what did you study?
So my initial studies, actually, and the golfers have arrived behind Tom, we're not the last, was in, I went to ANU, Australian National University in Canberra, really with no idea of what I was going to do or where that was going to lead to. I finished my economics degree there and thought, oh, actually, I graduated in the worst climate of 8% unemployment in Australia. And so, yeah, the golfers are looking for a tee off, so up there.
I've done a lot of that.
Yeah, Tom's been gesturing.
Up on top, of course. Of course, goes without saying, doesn't it? On the roof. See off the roof.
So, yeah, then, I ended up doing a CELTA, as you do, you know, which we shouldn't say that, if you can't get a job off and people go into teaching, which is exactly sort of what I did. But I did discover that I loved teaching, which was a big surprise, given that I hadn't particularly loved school that much.
But just to track back a little bit on that one, I mean, Middle East studies.
Yes.
Was that a bit left field?
Yes, at the time it was. I think... on our way to the UK, we transited in one of the Gulf states, and there I'd seen my first men in dresses, as I called them then, in Kandora. And I was so fascinated by that. I'm just wondering, like, what? Who are these people? Like, they look so different from us. You know, I come from rural Australia. Everyone was wearing shorts and a T-shirt. And then, yeah, that just really intrigued me. So I became very interested in Middle East, all things Middle East, and basically throughout high school. And so when I went to university, I did economics, and then with the coupling with Asian studies as a minor, and that was Middle East studies. So yeah, there was 8 of us in our Arabic class, and a similar number in the Quran in translation and Middle East politics as well.
And fun at ANU, good years?
Good years at ANU. Maybe not my most productive years, as probably many of us have experienced in our undergraduate times. But yeah, certainly it was very fun.
Were you an active student? I mean, were you doing bits and pieces? Did you work throughout uni?
Yes. I worked in a restaurant managing and waitressing. So I really loved the hospitality industry and considered going to become a chef when I also couldn't get a job, but chopping bags of onions was not for me, really.
And did you sort of get involved in activities at university? Were you part of clubs? Were you part of groups down there?
Yes, so I was very active in the political groups, clubs there. I won't name
it. Oh, really?
Yes. So I was I interned for one of the senators.
Had an opinion, did you?
I did have quite an opinion, yes. I still do. I won't air them today, though. Alienate half the listeners. I interned at one of the first female senators, actually, in her office. And that was a big eye-opener about how policymaking was made in Australia, basically how much on-the-fly policymaking was made, really. But it was a great experience for a young person.
And then you mentioned a little earlier on graduation. And it's interesting as well, because one would have thought that given your achievements since then and to date as well, that you would have been quite focused on what you wanted to do, when you wanted to do it, and when you wanted to achieve it. But as you said earlier, you know, you didn't really know what you wanted to do after graduating.
No, I didn't really want to know what I wanted to do when I went into it, to be honest. So I think, I think a lot of young people don't get really good advice about what to do, what kind of career they might want. And, even though I went to a good school where they had a lot of careers advisement, I still didn't really have an idea about where I saw myself in the future, I guess.
But obviously teaching and this affinity with education continued. With a focus to continuing that in Australia, or was there something nagging away of you, a bit of wanderlust to sort of broaden horizons a little?
Oh, no, I'd always wanted to work in the Middle East. So I was like busting at the seams. Like, you know, I graduated, I'm looking for jobs. Well, I interviewed at banks, that was terrible. But then once I had my teaching qualification, desperately trying to get to the Middle East. But as chance, luck, God would have it, I ended up in Singapore. So I was a bit off field and I was like, I didn't know anything about Asia at all. But yeah, so I spent an amazing 3 years in Singapore teaching.
And was that an eye opener as well? Was something that sort of cemented your commitment to educating further?
Yeah, that was just an incredible experience. I had an amazing boss who was very inspirational, and I think I learned a lot about another part of the world that I never would have otherwise. So yeah, and I just became even more passionate about education, and then that really led me into the job here in Russell-Cayman when I first arrived.
So from further education, uni, Singapore, bustling Singapore in the late 90s, early 2000s as well. What are you going to choose for us musically to sum up this period?
Well, an oldie but a goodie, Here I Go Again by Whitesnake. Has a big bit of 80s rock into it.
And it is Making Tracks. Very special guest with us here. Familiar face to the UAE, and none more so than Ras Al Khaimah from where we are broadcasting today. And Natasha Ridge is with us here and Making Tracks this morning. Absolute pleasure to have her with us. So we talked about those formative years. We talked about Singapore. When did and how did the UAE opportunity come about?
Well, as I said before, I was really looking forward to come to the Middle East anyway, shape or form. And interestingly, I'd applied for jobs in Egypt, but not been successful. And then I suddenly saw this little advertisement in the Times Educational Supplement saying, Ras Al Khaimah English Speaking School seeks a head of ESL. And yeah, and then I applied and came out here. And in this lovely surrounds that we're sitting now was only the Alhambra Hotel, which is just in front of us, and literally nothing else around it. Just there was no golf course, no nothing. And yeah, I applied, I stayed here, and yeah, and then I came over in 2001.
That was 2001?
Yeah.
So a very different Ras Al Khaimah back then?
A very different Ras Al Khaimah back then, yes. Yeah. We just had our first supermarket opened that year, Carrefour. Before that, a lot of people would drive to Ajman to go to the Carrefour there to do their shopping. The first hotel really was, here we see, the Alhambra Hotel was just opened, and things were starting to change, but still very different.
And what was your, what were your expectations? I mean, how much did you know of the United Arab Emirates, of Ras Al Khaimah at the time? Had you done sort of a bit of background on them?
No, well, this was sort of pre almost internet days. So there wasn't really that easy access to information. I actually didn't really know much about Dubai itself. Dubai was massively different too. I just came out here really as a first visit before I took the job to see what was what. And I was just amazed at how great it was, how wonderful the people were. And I think in Ras Al Khaimah, I really felt like I was in the Middle East. You just got that real sense of being in somewhere different and somewhere fantastic.
What was your scope of work? What were the challenges that you were charged with on arrival?
Well, the school had just been bought by His Highness Sheikh Saud bin Sakr Al Qasimi, the current ruler of Ras Al Khaimah. And he wanted all Emiratis to be able to access an international school experience, like a school in English curriculum school. So I was really charged with making that happen in terms of helping students come from government schools and enter a British curriculum school and really making sure that their English levels were able to meet with the demands of the curriculum. So we had to set up a whole ESL curriculum from scratch throughout the whole school.
You obviously imparted your knowledge, your experience with so many students, many of which you mentioned today are still around and still in contact with, some in fact even working for you as well. What about you though, personally? I mean, did you continue your studies?
Yes. I always love to learn. So I thought, what can I do while I'm here? So I just started a master's in international and community development because my first degree was economics, and I'd always had this passion for development more generally, even beyond education. So I took up studying that remotely by Deakin University in Australia, and that was really wonderful too. I learned a lot.
And during this time, obviously, you were focusing a lot on the education side of things, but also developing a number of other initiatives here in the region, festivals, events, etc., which were all around the sort of cultural base. Was it part of sort of promoting the culture of this region through education?
Yes, I mean, that came a bit later once we were starting with the foundation. So in the initial years at the school, we were doing a lot more about trying to really expose Emirati students to different, different things, different cultural experiences. But yes, definitely, we're working in all kinds of things.
Let's talk about the foundation. How did it come about in the first place?
I'd returned from my doctoral studies. I went to New York and did my doctorate there. And on coming back, I did my research on Ras Al Khaimah. And His Highness was very keen that we should have more research generated on education and Ras Al Khaimah in general, because at that time it was really the first piece of research that looked at the education sector and public schools. And so he was very interested that we should get more people involved. And so he thought, what a great idea that we could set up some kind of organisation that could fund doctoral researchers and simultaneously work on developing capacity, local capacity of teachers as well, so that we could improve the education system from both ends.
Yeah, and that's interesting. That's one of the things that you've been very hands-on with, which is obviously the focus on students, but also teaching standards as well. Have we seen a significant impact on the standards of teaching here, not just in Ras Al Khaimah, but in the region?
I'm not sure how much can be, again, attributable to just our work or research, but definitely we have seen an improvement in the standards of teaching throughout the region, I would say, and throughout the UAE in particular. In Ras Al Khaimah, we've had around 3,000 teachers go through our professional development programs over the last 8 to 10 years. And so that's been really wonderful to see teachers actually start to feel more passionate, especially public school teachers, about their jobs and about the work that they do and the impact they have.
In terms of, I mean, one of the things that you've done with that is exchange programs. Has that been key as well to sort of open eyes?
Yes, I think for a lot of Emirati teachers and a lot of teachers working in the UAE, I think, and there were some recent things I was just listening to on the news about teacher retention and these things going on currently in studies. One of the challenges is professional development for people. I mean, for a lot of expatriates, actually, not just even in the education sector. So this teacher exchange was really a way to give teachers, like, to sort of give them professional development, take them out of their context, out of the UAE, and look at other environments. Look, we went to Switzerland, to Malaysia, to Vietnam. What do we learn? What can we see? What's different? What's similar? And it's just been, it's been amazing, the response from the teachers.
Some of the other initiatives I just want to get your takes on. You've done work in prisons, specifically here in Ras Al Khaimah.
Yes.
What was the thinking behind that?
Well, again, we were in part of one of the first studies we did on education was looking at high school dropouts. And when we were looking at, well, where do dropouts from the school system end up, one of the places that we found them, unsurprisingly, was in the local prison.
Yeah.
And so we went there to interview them. We were like, oh, well, what do you guys need so that you can stay out of prison and re-enter society meaningfully? And so that they were like, well, we don't have a library. We need professional development courses. We need to have, you know, skills and things to enter. And so that's where it started. We built a library. We started running classes. And that was in the men's prison, and now we did the same in the women's. And so, we have an ongoing program of learning for inmates so that we can really help them reintegrate successfully.
You had the hands-on learning program for at-risk boys launch in 2014 to help boys to re-engage with education. As you mentioned, before that, you had the prisons programs running as well. 2020, for 6 years now that the at-risk boys program has been running. Are there still boys at risk here at the moment that need help?
Oh, definitely. I think... yeah, definitely. Across the UAE, we're seeing that. I think, though, the challenge is now not so much retention in school, but engagement and academic attainment. We're still seeing that boys in the UAE are underperforming compared to girls, but also underperforming compared to global averages. So we really need a big push, especially boys from the lower socioeconomic status. Emirati boys really do need something else to help them see what is the point of education. Why is education relevant to me? Why should I get educated? And the hands-on learning program aims to help them reintegrate into that, like, oh, yeah, I can do this. I can succeed. I can do something with my life, and I can go on to further education.
So many results, so much more to talk about. We will, of course, talk about the here and now and the future in just a few moments' time. Not, though, before we've charged you with telling us about track number 3. What is it and why?
Well, anyone who is here for New Year's Eve will know that Ras Al Khaimah is very big on fireworks these days, and we're having some amazing record-breaking things going on. But also in the context of that, the foundation, I think, has really just taken off in the last few years. So this is Katy Perry, Firework.
Do you ever feel like a plastic bag drifting through the wind, wanting to start again? Do you ever feel so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Just on the night.
We wrap things up with our special guest on Making Tracks. Absolute pleasure to have Dr. Natasha Ridge with us here on Making Tracks today. We've been talking about so many of the achievements of the foundation. That's the Sheikh Saad bin Zakar Al Qassimi Foundation for Policy Research right here in Ras Al Khaimah. 2019, last year, you had the Women at Work series launched. Has that proved a success?
Yeah, that was actually only in December, but we had a great turnout and a great response. I didn't think I'd realised how much women are really interested in getting together and learning from other women about, you know, career possibilities, trajectories, what you need to do, and just lessons from others.
What are your, I mean, I don't know if you're one for making commitments at the beginning of the year, a list of things to do for 2020 as well. But what are your plans? Let's talk about personal plans first and foremost, because you mentioned and admitted earlier that you're always keen to learn, always keen to further your horizons. What are your plans for this year and moving forward?
Well, personally, I think I'd really like to learn ballroom dancing this year. That's on my list. So I've got some personal goals. And I went to a course at the Courtyard Playhouse in Alcours, improv course. And I would have to just say that's amazing. So I'm intending to do another course there. And I would so recommend that to anyone as just something quite actually life-changing and eye-opening. But yeah, in addition to that, I've got a book that's very pending on father involvement. And personally those things. And just to do a bit more R&R, really.
And in terms of the professional side of things, I mean, this is always the stage when we get to ask about that work-life balance as well. Is that something that you focus on? Is that something you've been able to attain?
I think one of the things we've done at the Foundation is, I guess, not to redefine that, but take a slightly different perspective on it. Because I think this idea of work-life being separate is a bit problematic, because obviously work bleeds into life and life is work and in some senses. So what we really talk about is flow, this idea that at some points your work is really busy and that at other points you're really busy with maybe vacations or families or perhaps some kind of hobbies. But that idea of, I guess, balancing that flow so that not one thing dominates, but not feeling like, oh, every day 8 to 5 I'm at work and then I go home at 5 and from 5 to 9 I'm at home. And then, so really I think just getting a rhythm to work is something that we really try to work on I try to work on personally. So that there's some times that are super busy, but then there's other times where I'm much more relaxed.
And what's the sort of the goals for the foundation for 2020?
Well, the Ras Al Khaimah Fine Arts Festival is kicking off next weekend here on the 31st of January. So we're really keen to get as many people down here for that 2 months. There'll be artworks, free cinema nights, workshops, also all free to the public. It's an amazing 110 pictures on display in Jazeera al-Tamra, an old town not far from here. I think just a great experience. So that's really high on our priority list. And then we have a whole bunch of other things around education. We're looking at philanthropy and education. We're looking at sort of how do we do more around the UAE in helping to promote better educational outcomes. And I guess also this idea of women at work and supporting people in the workplace in generally. What does it mean to be a woman at work? What does it mean to really thrive and prosper in the workplace for women, both single, married and all types?
Really interesting times, isn't it? And we're seeing a sort of real generational shift here, not just in the UAE, but worldwide at the moment, with a very upwardly mobile younger generation looking to make an impact on a workplace. And I suppose the importance as well, and I don't know if you agree, but is continuing to focus on elder generations throughout.
Yeah. I think that's one of our biggest challenges coming up, is a big study that we're planning on the elderly here and care for the elderly, integration of the elderly, because I think there's been this great focus on youth, which is wonderful and needed, but those youth won't be youth forever. So I think, as I'm getting older myself too, this is very personally motivated, but you know, what are we doing to make sure that there are opportunities for everyone at all stages in life?
Been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much indeed for your time. Thanks for coming and joining us in a container.
It's
no
been
less.
Amazing. I know. I've never done this before, and maybe I never will.
No, have we. Big thanks to all the team at Ella Container as well for, containing us over the course of the last 3 hours. Huge thanks to our very special guest, Dr. Natasha Ridge, for being our subject on Making Tracks today. If people want to find out more about the foundation, where do they go?
www.alkasmifoundation.com.
Thank you so much indeed for agreeing to make tracks for us today. You have to give us one more, though.
I do. And we're going to close it off with Kyrie by Mr. Mister, another oldie but a goodie. That's what I am. Thanks so much.
cast the sea into my soul. It reaches into where I cannot hide, setting my feet upon the road. My heart is old, it holds my memories. My body burns into my flame. Somewhere between the soul and soft machine.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.